Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio show. This is the show where we discuss the concept, history, and application of black people, you and me, leaving the slavery suffering of death of our former slave master to create our own society based on freedom, justice, and equality. On behalf of the Time to Leave movement, I would like to thank our new and most especially our regular callers that call in every week to listen to our discussions, our guests, and our interpretations of what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is admonishing us to do, and that's to separate and to build our own communities. We don't get a whole lot of people listening to this show, but we have consistent and regular listeners, and we just pray and we hope, and you're tuning in on a regular basis. So we hope and we pray that the knowledge or the information that we share with you all, that it's affecting you so that you're making plans to either leave the where you live now and to and join on with a community of like minds, or to take over the community that you now live in. We're hoping that the information that we impart and the guests that come and share their experiences gives you elements for your plan. We hope that you're not just listening just because it's you want to stay just up to date on the latest talk on separation, but we really hope that you are tuning in on a regular basis. so that you can actually put together your plan, the steps that you need to work toward your exodus to a like-minded community, a community to where people know that we're not going to achieve full freedom by living with our open enemy, but we have to come together as black people. We have to come together and pool our resources. We have to come together and make our ideals and ideas become reality. And the only way you can do that is to actually physically come together. You can achieve a lot by doing it virtually. You can achieve quite a bit. But there comes a time where the rubber has to hit the road. It comes a time where the most courageous out there have to say, okay, I'm going to be one of the first ones. I'm going to sacrifice my current living conditions, whether it's somewhat comfortable, I'm close to family and friends, and I have a nice mosque or study group, but I know that Allah has blessed me with much, so I need to step out and put this together. Or I think Allah blessed me with much, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put my knowledge to the test. I'm going to see if I'm all that. I'm going to see that if I really am pioneer material. So that's a challenge, and it's an encouragement, and it's a challenge. It's an encouragement for those of us who are somewhat apprehensive, but it's a challenge for those of us who are pretty sure they got the skills and the knowledge to do it, but you're not doing it yet. You're not doing it because, you know, there's some discomfort involved, there's some risk involved, and you don't want to take that chance. Well, Allah is going to make things, He's going to put fire on us. So for whatever case you're in, we're going to be in a position that we're going to have to step out on faith. We're going to have trust and love and belief that we can do this as a people. So tonight's show is our separation Q&A panel discussion. This is the show where we discuss the last show, and also we discuss current events, and we discuss things that's been happening that deserves our attention from a separation and community building point of view. And as I speak, our Timely founder and Muhammad Farms manager and Minister of Agriculture is on the line, Dr. Richley Mumin.
Assalamu alaikum. Well, I'm just,
alaikum salam.
Would like to chime in to others, but I would rather for others to speak first, because they heard the program last week, and so did I. So I would like for others to ask questions or make comments first, and I'll be on the line to field whatever questions they might have.
Okay, time to leave, brothers and sisters. You've heard our wonderful brother, Dr. Ridgely. He wants to answer your questions. So if you listen to the show, or if you you have a question regarding the subject matter of who will be the farmers of the future, please press the 1 on your keypad, and you will be the first one in the queue. So don't be shy. Press that 1. Dr. Ridgely is by the line, and unless you just want to, if you're enamored with my voice, and want to hear me keep talking, then don't push the 1. But I'd rather you all push the 1. Find at the same time. And we have a caller. Thank you for your courage, caller. Caller with the last 4 digits, 5523. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Brother Johnny X, I'm calling from the Greenville area of South Carolina.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Oh, yes, sir. I had it's more of a comment than a question, and then seeking direction, you know, from the subsequent answer from my comment. But I had I am part of a sister, Monica Wright. She has like a micro lending group on Facebook. And she's been active at it for, I probably would say, 5 years now, in which the contributing participants put into a pool of $25, in which it's cycled out for whatever needs or wants that the participants need it for. And I was looking at it as a potential like launching pad for a online credit union, I guess, so that, you know, it'll be to have ease, more ease in the group economics of, you know, coming together just by contributing a little bit to do a lot. So I was wondering what did Dr. Wrigley think of that, you know, with of course some modifications to fit our what our venture is. I have posted it a few times.
Well, I think it is a good. I think it's a great idea. You said it's been going on for how long now?
Sister Monica Wright has been doing it for about 5 years now. I posted it in the group a couple times, and was asking if, you know, if we could study it and see how we can tweak it.
Been a part of it? Have you been a part of it?
Yes, sir.
So had you? You put money in? Did you have to get any money out?
Not yet, because I haven't gotten into the cycle yet. I'm in still a cycle. Once things are repaid back into the cycle, then the next cycle, the participants, then they'll get cashed out. And I think it's up to $1,000 minimum, $500 to $1,000. But yeah, I just got in it. I haven't been in it that long. But she's been operating it for the past. For about 6 months now.
And what's the cycle? Every year, what's the cycle?
You can go to her page. Her name is Monica Wright. She's on Facebook, and then
I'm asking you, bro. Just ask the question. What's the cycle? Do you know the cycle or not?
No, I don't know the payout cycle.
Okay, fine. Okay. That's all I'm asking. What I'm saying is, I'm just trying to get a. You say me evaluate something. I'm gonna have to talk to the people who are in it.
People
who are in it would be the ones who can tell me whether it works or not. And since you're in it, that's why I ask you those questions. So as soon as you go through a cycle and you actually able to get some money out, then you come back on and you tell us how it works. Because right now, as far as I'm concerned, it's a nice idea. This is something that most people have used all over the world for thousands of years. It's not new. The question is it working for you? Then
we can discuss that.
I'm not going to discuss. I mean, Brother Cedric has a whole book on the different methods by which other people have done these type of internal lending cycles. They have proven to work. The question is the one that she's talking about, has it worked? Do you know anybody who not only over the internet, but somebody personally that you know has been in for a long period of time and was able to cash in and cash out?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, you need to find somebody who's real, not on the internet, but who's real to see what's been their experience.
Yes, sir.
I'll see them face to face.
Yes, sir. And when I do know a sister in Detroit that I know from networking, am I able to, you know, have her bear witness to you, like via?
Well, yeah. I mean, do you know her personally?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, yeah, you could have her to call in and to give, since you've been in it for a while, and to give us her experience.
Okay. I do just that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yes, sir.
And Brother John, you said you posted information on our Time to Leave Facebook page?
Yes, sir. It's called, what is it called? You got the colors, the red, green, and black. It's called Black Economics.
Okay.
But it's in there up under my post. It's in there. It's about two or three times I posted it.
I'll take a look. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, brother.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Ridgely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I am not familiar. Yes, this is Brother Carlton. I'm not familiar with the concept that Brother, even the general concept that he's talking about, and the terminology that Brother Johnny used, it reminds me of a game that was real popular, the money game that was popular in the black communities, where you put money in. It was like what they call it, the pyramid schemes, and they call it the money game, where you put money in and you cashed out. So when he started using that terminology, not to say that he's doing that, that's what came to mind.
There's a pattern. The system that is used is a lot of West Indians use it. What it is you say you put each month you put in $25 into the pot, okay? Then it goes around. So like so 1 year is your time, and so you get $1,000. Depending on how many in there, then you get $1,000, which now you can go and, you know, do what you want to with the money. But that's how it's done. It's passed around. So you imagine if you got 10 people putting in, say, $25 a month. So in 12 months, that's $300. $25 a month for 12 months is 10 to 50. Yeah, around $300. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got $300 in there. All right. Now, but if you got 10 people, that's
$3,000.
Okay. So now it's your time to get cash out. So you get $1,000. All right.
Okay.
But it's still $2,000 still in there, and that's building. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you're able to get that lump sum out to do something you want. Now, in terms of how you work that amount that's still in there that's building, that's something that the group can then use and determine how they're going to do it in terms of investment. Okay? But you keep people involved in it because everybody sooner or later is going to get that $1,000 so they can do what they want to with it. But then the residual is something that the group should decide on what they're going to do as a group. Again, Brother Cedric,
that's interesting.
Has some books. Brother Cedric Muhammad has some books. So just look up Brother Cedric Muhammad.
Secret.
And he has three books talking about these
right.
different methods of how other people have done internal financing, different types of models.
Mm.
Okay? The key is that they will work as long as there's trust. They'll work.
Trust.
That's why I need to talk to somebody who was involved with this one to see how it has worked.
Right, right. Because the key factor, like you said, is trust. And in most cases, we haven't been able to keep that, maintain that trust consistently enough to build something.
Well, that's not necessarily true. The reason I say that is I just had a meeting with some farmers this past weekend, and one of them is from New York originally, from Queens, and I posted on my Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about how it used to be in Queens, New York, where there was trust. He talks about how the black businesses, they would trust their customers when they didn't have money, you know, out of a cycle. In other words, get paid every other week, so somebody will have some money 1 week and they needed some money until their check came in. Well, they just write a note, and they put that note in the cash register, and then when they get paid, they come in and pay it. He talked about the same thing with the clothing companies. Black clothing companies with advanced credit, especially around the time that school starts, so the children could have their clothes to go back to school. So there was an amount of trust in there. But he talks about what happened with integration, where they, in fact, not only did they provide it, see, it's called redlining. We was forced to stay close to one another. But then with integration and the breaking of redlining, those of us before, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and even some business owners, they decided to move out of the hood and move out into the suburbs with white folks. In the meantime, the bulldozers came to the black community and called urban renewal and put expressways right through the old business districts. Okay? Then after they finished doing that, they brought drugs into the community. And what really destroyed our confidence and faith in one another is the drugs. Because then people would be stealing, breaking in your house, they'd be shooting, they'd be killing over these drugs. So it's not that we never did it before. It's not that we never had trust before, but we have been systematically destroyed. And we got Negro leaders and even some black leaders talking about well, you know, black folks, they don't ever get together, blah, blah, blah. That is BS. We have gotten together on a number of occasions, but we have an open enemy, mm-hmm. and we're trying to act like we don't. And they come in and they have destroyed everything we have tried. Now we have to be ready to fight for whatever we are going to build. We're going to have to come together and be willing to fight for what we are going to build, because otherwise they're going to destroy you, outright destroy you,
yes,
or
sir.
Put stuff in your mix to destroy you, poison the environment in which you do business in. We got to understand that business is warfare. Going into business as a black man and woman in America, you're going at war with those who keep you as slaves. Now we are what's called economic slaves. We're debt slaves and slaves to debt. So, but we're still slaves. We come in the world with nothing. We leave with nothing. And as long as we are not organized, don't have a plan, they're going to continue to feed off of us. And any time you try to do something they don't like, they kill you. Just like we just found out that they killed Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday did not die from a drug overdose. The Bureau of Narcotics killed her because they didn't want her. They got tired of her singing that song about what's it called?
Strange fruit.
And the way she would do it, when she would do a presentation, when she would sing, that would be the last song. All the lights mm-hmm. are cut off except the light on her face. And when she sung that song, the light would go off, and that would be the end of it. This was a protest about what they've been doing to black folk. But they didn't like that. They couldn't make her stop it. So they killed her. And then now we think that she died of an overdose. But it was a government who sent somebody there to get her strung out on heroin. Government did that. Then she overcame that. She was in jail for 18 months. She overcame that. And then they took away her license to sing in the clubs. So she couldn't sing in the clubs no more to make her living. So eventually she went back to heroin. But she didn't die from an overdose. She died in the hospital with her arms locked to a bed. And the narcotics, the Bureau of Narcotics, kept people from coming in the room to administer to her. She was murdered. Okay? So that's what they do to us who will not bow. And yet we try to act like we can get along with these people. Okay? We're scared to separate, but we're dying integrated. Okay?
Yes, sir. But thank you for making that plain, Dr. Ridgely. And thank you, Brother Johnny, for that question and inspiring this discussion. And anyone else who's on the line, this is your opportunity to make a comment on our discussion, to join in on the discussion, or if you have a question having to do with anything in general about time to leave and building your own community about the show, last week's show, The Future of Farming. You know, what do you think the future of farming is, and where do you think the future of farming is headed in this country? So please go ahead, press that number one on your dial, and we will recognize you immediately in the queue. Don't be shy. Not too many opportunities where you get a chance to call in and discuss this topic of separation and building our own communities and be able to get an answer right away, or just to discuss what you've been thinking about. Please go ahead and press that number one and talk to Dr. Ridgely, ask a question, and we'll be more than happy to entertain that question.
Okay, while people are thinking about it, Sister Ann, she's going to come in. As I was discussing with those farmers who I met with this weekend, and they are looking to work together with the nation towards some future development. And I had to get it straight with them that production agriculture, the profitability is out of it. And as I was talking to them, they had to admit that. One farmer, pretty good-sized black farmer, one year he had a chemical bill. He does cotton, peanuts, and stuff like that on hundreds and hundreds of acres.
Mm-hmm.
He said he had a chemical bill of $400,000.
Man.
A chemical and fertilizer bill, $400,000. Well, you're not gonna survive like that. So he's looking to get into something else because it just costs too much money, and yet the returns are too low. So I was telling him that we have to go back to doing something that older farmers did way back in the past. They didn't settle for just producing a product and then selling to the market to a jobber or a wholesaler. They would make products with it. I mean, having grist mills there was always in an area one farmer who was on a stream, and they put up a grist mill that was run by water. And the other farmers in the area would come to that farm with their corn and their wheat, and they would grind it into flour or grind it into cornmeal and sell the cornmeal or take that cornmeal or that flour home to their home so they can utilize it through the rest of the year. So they work cooperatively together, but they did that. But now you don't see those mills anymore. You see remnants of them if you know what you're looking at. Now the farmers just take it down to the jobber or to the what they call a grain elevator. They just sell it market price, and then the grain elevator sells it to the companies that are going to change it into something else. Most of the flour mills now, for instance, is out towards the Kansas City area, General Mills, and so forth. Then another is Kellogg's up there in Michigan.
Okay? So let me ask you, Dr. Ridgely.
Yeah.
Why haven't more farmers practiced or even thought about doing value-added things in the past?
Because they don't teach you that in school. They don't promote that in the extension agent. Nobody's teaching them that. Nobody's telling them that. I didn't find out this from anybody except me experiencing the fact that you couldn't make no money selling wheat. Wheat went down at one time like $1.75 from $4.23 in 1996. About 4 or 5 years later, it went down to $1.75. It wasn't worth growing wheat. So we had to take the wheat and get it milled into flour so we can move our wheat. And then we got a flour mill. Okay, most times what farmers do, they either get out of that product or they try to wait it out or they borrow money or if they're white, no tax money bails them out. And so black farmers don't get that, and yet they're still trying to grow for the market because they're not taught any differently. They don't know.
Yes, sir. And Sister Ann's line is open. As-salamu alaykum, Sister Ann.
Wa alaykum salam, sir. And to add to that, you know, you've got to be able to have like minds on ideas when you're trying to work with a group. You know, not many farmers, and I keep saying this over and over whenever I get a chance. I think it's about going on maybe 2-3 years now. I went to the University of Georgia to take a training to be able to do all types of canned products, commercially even. And in that class, there were 2, maybe 3 other white farmers who were trying to get training so that they could have a commercial kitchen on their farm to begin doing value-added products from some of the things that they are growing. That's the trend. However, USDA does not support that. And I was telling my husband recently, even locally, these gains, and I'm using his term that the minister don't like. I got to find some other way to talk about it. But these tactics that they use to keep the farmer in the condition that he is in so that he has to sell to the larger corporate farmers who then buy all the products from the smaller farmers and sell to producers. So that's the game they want farmers to stay in. And I say it's a game because even recently I went to a program sponsored by USDA and one of the local organizations that work with farmers. And they had this individual there getting information and input from the various people there to what we needed to do in this Southwest Georgia area to address what they are calling the food desert. And, of course, I brought some points that others had not considered. But from that, they were to, USDA was to assemble sort of a board of farmers to begin to put in place some policies that could help the farmers in this area. Well, I was suggested as one of the persons to be a part of that. The individual never called me. And then the day of the deadline, submit your application to be a part of the group, is when they release the application. So I was telling my husband, I said, I'm not even going to try to do this, because that showed me right there that the taxes they are using, they already know who they want to be a part of it, and it's going to be people who don't have much of a clue as to what really needs to be done to change things, people whose idea is to stay with the status quo and just say, USDA just need to give us a little bit more money to do this, that, and the other. But we've got to get people of like mind. And there are maybe some. I'm noticing that more and more Muslims are talking about buying farmland, small farmers. But we have to get an understanding, cause, and I'll say this, Dr. Ridgely was telling me about the conversation he had with the farmers he met with this weekend and what they are trying to produce as farmers. Well, if they want to do business with the nation, one of the first things they want to produce is what the majority of us don't even eat, and that's beef. So you got to know your market. Number one, you've got to know your market. You got to know what they need. And if you don't know what they need, one of the best things that we can do as far as trying to service black people is to do training on what they should be eating, because most of them don't know. But that's all I have on that point. But I wanted to talk about the show last week also. And we had been in Greenville, Mississippi, doing this healthy living and agricultural, health and agricultural conference is what it was. And it was sort of a town hall meeting. But what I noticed, wherever we go, even when you do things locally, you're usually only going to attract the people who are already trying to make the changes in their health, who know about what needs to be done to change things. So we have to now start thinking of ways to impact our people, to get to our people. It used to be you could send announcement to churches and have them read. I remember growing up, and that used to happen in church all the time. They would get these announcements of things going on in the community, and they would read it many times, posted on their bulletin board. And people could make decisions to attend these events. But that doesn't happen anymore. And I don't even know why, but for some reason, a church does not have to have a mailbox. I found that out by working with this group of women farmers, went around the community here and just wrote down the address off of all of the churches that I could find. We sent out, I don't know how many letters and invitations and flyers on events that we were having, and most of them would come back. And then someone in the group mentioned that churches don't have to have mailboxes.
Well, how do they get their
nobody
mail?
Nobody is there. That nobody gets any mail. So you see the dilemma we're in? I mean, they don't have to, but they could if they wanted to, I'm sure. But somebody's told them they don't have to, so nobody does. At least no, none of the black churches that only a few, one or two, the information did not come back. But 90% of them, or I would say 98% of them, the information was returned because they have no post office box or mailbox. So that's just another ploy to keep the people from being informed. What I'm saying is now we've got to be more innovative as to how we can get information to the people. You know, not all our people will buy the final call. I know some suggestions are put your flyers inside of the final call. But that may not work because, you know, if you're trying to reach hundreds of people to get a certain percentage out to your event, then that may not work. And it, and then there's always, you can do public service announcements, but what I am finding, especially for the for the age group you want to target, the quote-unquote millennials, not many of them are into television. So
that's
now
true.
You're at another, especially when it comes to the news section of TV. They might watch some, I don't even, like my grandson, 21 years old, does not watch TV at all. Not at all. And I noticed his younger brother and sister, they don't watch TV. They're teenagers, 14 and 16. They don't watch television. So now,
on their phones?
How do we, pardon?
They probably just spend all their time on their cell phones.
And on the internet. Cell phone and internet. How do we reach them today? I guess that's why Donald Trump tweets so much. But we've got to come to a point where we sit down and strategize on how are we going to get critical information to our people. You know, and the young people, they're not in the church. So, you know, they're out there, but we've got to get to
them. That's right.
They're on social media, and we have to keep jumping around on social media to try to get their attention. That's one way to do it. But, you know, getting the information to them that is going to help them to make good life decisions now is going to be critical. And that's what I thought about when we were in Greenville, Mississippi. There were, you know, some very conscious people involved with the effort there. But as I said, the masses of the community that really need the information never seem to be the ones who come out and get that information. Now, I did notice that once here in our community, our women's group did a program where we were trying to help people in the community to navigate and be able to complete applications to get some of the USDA funds to do home repairs and even to apply for the home loans through rural development. So what we did, we put out a lot of flyers, posted flyers on businesses. We didn't do TV advertising. I think we did, I don't know if we did radio spots for that or not. But anyway, because we were going to be serving food and it was free, they didn't have to pay anything to come to this. This was a service we were offering. And we had an overflow crowd. So that may have to be something that we do. We have to look at some other methods to get them in. Yeah, we had an overflow crowd.
So feed people, huh?
yeah, we said we were going to feed people, and they came and they ate, and most stayed throughout the program. And I remember also talking to, and you and some of the listeners may remember this sister, Frederica Bay, up in New Jersey, who was who started this women's organization, Women in Support of the Million Man March.
Yes, ma'am.
After the march. And since then, well, she's in real estate, and since then she has bought a very nice office building and headquarters for her organization. And at one time, I think the mosque in her city was even trying to lease space in her building. But I asked her, she was having meetings once a month with the women in her group, and I met her. I was in New Jersey, met her personally, even stayed at her home. So I asked her the question, what is the key to getting the women to come to your regular meeting? Her answer was so simple. Feed them.
Food.
I said, that's it? She said, yes. Feed them.
Wow.
So now we have to begin to look differently at the things we're trying to do. So this February, hopefully, inshallah, we're our women's group, Georgia Women Community Producers Association. We skipped last year, but we're going to try to do it. Well, we skipped this year, but we're trying to do it in 2019, a program we started about 4 years ago, giving the history of the culture of food in the Black community. We may need to tweak it a little bit and call it something different to get the interest up. But in that program, that is where we do a lot of educating on food, healthy eating. I remember almost 3 years ago, it may have been the first or second program, Dr. Risley was there and he spoke. And at that time, we were telling people about high fructose corn syrup and the effects it had on the body. The people were so very interested. Even after we concluded the program, they did not want to leave. They sat around and talked, and it was just a very, very good environment and good experience. And they were genuinely interested. But what we noticed after talking about high fructose corn syrup, you know, the Sierra Mist soda was the only one on the market that it was using real sugar. And I will buy them occasionally because it's, you know, similar to ginger ale, somewhat without the ginger, but it promoted itself as having real sugar. What we noticed after that, or what I noticed, where I was buying that particular soda from, I told my husband, I said, you know, there are none there. They leave. They all get sold before I can get there. So I attributed it to the information we gave the people about the high fructose corn syrup. They started buying the Sierra Mist and leaving all of the other stuff. And I know that happened because something else happened after that. The company that made Sierra Mist took it off the market. They took it off. Yes, they took it off the market for about a year. They're bringing it back now. They took it off the market and replaced it with one in the same green bottle. It was called something else. And if you were not paying attention, you might pick that up and think you're getting Sierra Mist, and then you look at it, and it's something different with high fructose corn syrup in it.
Wow.
So they were trying to force the people to buy what had the high fructose corn syrup in it. So I just stopped buying it. I just stopped buying it, and every now and then, some of the gourmet sodas that or around with real sugar. There are a few brands they sell at Publix and another store sometimes get some that I shop at. They have real sugar. They are craft beverages. So I will buy them occasionally. So I said, okay, that's it. If Sierra Mist is off the market, I guess that's it for me. Well, lo and behold, just a couple of months ago, I was in one of the stores that used to carry them. And they had some. And I looked at it. I said, well, let me see if it's got real sugar. Because they might have brought it back and put high fructose corn syrup in it. Well, I looked at it, and it did have real sugar. So they're gradually bringing it back. I guess they're trying to test the market to see if people are really paying attention. But I was in Walmart. Yes, I was in Walmart, and I wanted to buy one because I like to make floats sometimes, ice cream and banana and the soda. So I was in Walmart, and I wanted to buy one. So I went over to where it sold, looked up on the counter, and all around it, all these soda, there was one Sierra Mist left, but everything else was filled up. So
wow.
People are paying attention. And the food producers are seeing that. So that's why I feel that it is the right time for farmers to think about adding value to some of the crops they grow or specialize in any crop that they want to add value to. And personally, I think the craft beverage is an excellent idea. And the thing
kinda
is...
Kind of like these folks that are...
Go ahead.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Kind of like these folks that are making these those beers, these microbreweries
the
that make these small beers.
Exactly. All, they're concentrating on alcohol, but maybe the farmer can concentrate on a natural fruit or juice beverage. They got the crop. So why not? And that's what we have to do. We have to get the farmers to change their focus because the days of just growing vegetables and going and sitting somewhere all day, hoping somebody will buy it. If they don't, you got to bring it back home and quickly do something with it. Those days are fast leaving, fast leaving. I've done it. It's not enjoyable. And that is one reason we started looking at alternatives to just trying to do a farmer's market, unless we're going to have fresh as well as prepared items at a farmer's market. Now, one of the things I did learn, stop me, Brother Carlton, if somebody else wants to chime in.
Well, let me ask it. Right now they're not there, but I think they're listening to what you're saying. But still, brothers and sisters, if you have a question or a comment about what Sister Ann is sharing with us, please press 1. We're down to our last 11 minutes. And you have time to get your question answered. So go ahead, Sister Ann.
Yes, and right now I'm also working with another group of farmers trying to establish a co-op. But we can't come to consensus on what kind of co-op we want this to be.
What do you mean?
Well, in the planning stages, we had suggested we want to be a producers co-op. Sit around and we talked about what crops everybody wants to grow so that we'll have enough to service the market. But then I started thinking. There was some, I can't remember the name of it right offhand, but there's a distribution company out of Atlanta, Georgia, who's contacted a member of the co-op that we're working with, and they want to buy from the farmers. They want to buy wholesale from the farmers, yet they are a wholesaler. So if you put your thinking cap on and say, okay, they want to buy wholesale from me, and then they want to resell it at wholesale prices, what kind of price could I get?
Not much.
Exactly. So I'm not going to be a slave to anybody else. And, you know, we have all these people coming talking about they want to help the small farmer. Well, why don't you put me in direct contact with the person who wants my product rather than you coming to buy my product to sell it to someone else? That's the way you help me as a farmer, not you being a middleman to get my hard work that I put into this. You come to me and give me pennies, then you go and sell it to someone else. Now, I'm noticing also in your larger cities, and there was even one in, we went to, Dr. Rizzo and I were fortunate enough to go to Louisville, Kentucky a couple of years ago to a farmer's convention there. And there was a female there who befriended us and took us around Louisville to show us some of the things that are going on there. And they are turning warehouses into growing stations, especially for salad greens. But one of the challenges I'm reading about that is they still lack a lot of the nutrients because of the lack of photosynthesis from natural sunlight. Mm. So you just can't beat Mother Nature. I mean, we can grow and it looks pretty, but the nutritional value is not there when you try to do things in an artificial manner versus letting it grow naturally using all of the amenities that nature provides, rainwater with some nutrients in it, good soil that replenishes itself, insects that help to pollinate, all of those things that are a critical part in what you're trying to grow. So when you're using these artificial environments, you know, there's a challenge there that's not in a natural environment. But, yes, they can produce. And also, a lot of your gourmet restaurants now are having gardens attached to the restaurant, especially for things like the herbs and salad items. So the farmers now have to get into doing research to see what it is that we can grow and then turn that into some kind of valuable product. And while I'm talking, this is one other thing I want to say. In order to get our young people interested in agriculture, they have got to see where they can go into agriculture and still make a living. And that is why I suggest value added. There's a program that comes on public access TV where this man has a tour business and he puts together tours and contact people in other countries who are still doing crafts germane to their area. And he takes tours there. They go to places in India and get firsthand knowledge on rug making and using natural dyes made from fruits and vegetables. This is what I discussed with the group when we were in Greenville, Mississippi. These are some of the things that we have to start thinking about. Get outside of the box and start thinking, you know, what can I grow and turn it into something else? And it does not necessarily have to be another food product. Natural dyes. I'm noticing that people are going back to what they call milk paint. I want to do some investigation to find out, you know, what are the primary ingredients in milk paint? That's some of the very first paint that was ever used, and it's supposed to be an all-natural ingredient. But now they charge an enormous price to get that paint. It's a powder that you just mix water with and make up the paint. So that's a product we need to look at. And there are some other things.
Was it the end? I want.
Yes, sir.
We're down to the last 5 minutes, and I was going to suggest that Your task force is hosting next week's show. Did you want to give a preview or give our listeners an idea of what they can expect for next week before we end the show?
Oh, yes, sir. I'll be more than happy to. Yes, on next Tuesday, we're going to have a guest on who's been on before. Is Mr. John Bradley. And he builds homes from shipping containers. He has land, and he's trying to develop an entire community of people who are building homes from these shipping containers. He and his wife sponsored a workshop last year that I was fortunate enough to be able to attend. It was a 3-day workshop where we were able to see how these things are actually put together, the framing, the welding, everything as to what it takes to really turn it into a livable home. He himself has a very nice home that is a combination of traditional build and shipping containers. And he has worked with local officials to get some standards and regulations put in place as to what people who are wanting to do this need to be aware of. So he's going to be our guest next week, and we encourage you to call in. He's going to talk about why we need community.
So, okay.
Yes.
I just want to add something before
yes,
we go
sir.
Close out. When we talk about trying to get information to the people, you might recall, y'all, that schools used to be a place where they would teach you at. But they're not teaching people in school no more. They're just training them, and they're controlling what you're going to get. I know you heard about this big issue about, they say Mr. Farrakhan called some people termites up in Detroit. Well, that was just a smokescreen. What he did that really upset some people was that he had 7 young black men, went to 20 schools at the invitation of the police chief of the schools to talk to the young people about stop the killing. Within 5 minutes of them brothers speaking, all the students calmed down, chilled out, were engrossed in what they were saying to the point they didn't want to go back to class. So the teachings of Honorable Elijah Muhammad to transform the school system overnight. They don't want our students anything except to be a fool. I'm sorry I got to put it like it is. The whole educational system is to make fools out of people. I have a PhD in agricultural economics from Michigan State, one of the biggest and baddest agricultural schools in the world. And I didn't learn a damn thing about value added until I got down here and had to find out for myself. I didn't know about you can't make any money in production agriculture. They made you think you could. They know you can't. They didn't tell me about the subsidies that the white farmers were getting and the black farmers weren't. And that's why the white farmers are still in business. So a PhD in agricultural economics, I ain't learned a damn thing. So, but Mr. Farrakhan's students can go into a school and transform a school in 5 to 15 minutes. We got to decide on whether we want to be free or whether we want to pass on this slavery crap to our grandchildren. As-salamu alaykum.
Well, alaykum salam. And thank you, Dr. Rijni. And thank you, Sister Ann, and for coming on the show and sharing. And we look forward to next week's show. And brothers and sisters, please mark your calendars and tune in next week. And we look forward to having you. And may Allah bless you all. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Won't you let me Won't you help me? Won't you help me understand your
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone.
Alone.
I never at once felt so alone.
Alone.
I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire.
Down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be.